Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're so pleased to have a very established author, Professor Dr. Gregory Freeland, on the program. And we're going to talk about his new book that's coming out this spring called Music in the Black Community and Desegregated North Carolina, with a subtitle, It's All Right. Dr. Freeland, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So before we jump into this great book titled Music in the Black Community in Desegregated North Carolina, could you share with our audience a little bit about your education background, experience?
Mm-hmm. Well, I did grow up in North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, went to Hillside High School there. And then I moved to Santa Barbara, California. And in between that time, I did go into the U.S. Army. And while I was in there, I did take a couple of classes, actually, at the University of Maryland Extension course. I was stationed in South Korea.
Oh, wow. But
then I came out, I ended up at UCSB eventually. Mm-hmm. And I actually got my BA from there as well as my PhD. So I got my PhD in political science there.
Mm.
Uh-huh. And that's pretty much it. I've been to various institutes, you know, since that time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much it. I've studied Spanish because I do a little Latin American culture and politics.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually studied Spanish at the University of Havana, as well as another institute in Guatemala.
Wow. Nice. So this book, the genesis of this book, how did this book come about? It is a very unique title, and it's really diving into a few areas. Number one, the whole Black culture and Black music that we have, but also in the desegregated part of North Carolina, which still has its issues, a lot of issues today.
Yeah. Well, I had to clear up, though. It is segregated North Carolina, not desegregated.
Segregated. Thank you for.
Yes. Segregated North Carolina.
Segregated. Yes. Thank you for clarifying.
And the idea sort of had been in the back of my mind for quite some time, but you know, it never really comes to fruition because other things are going on. But a couple of years ago, The Atlantic had a writer who interviewed me about my history, background, growing up down there, and so on. And I ended up talking about things like my great-great-great parents,
mm-hmm.
you know, who actually won slavery, et cetera, you know? And I started thinking about it. And then, you know, Chris McCullough, who was a friend of David's, you know, that you mentioned here,
mm-hmm.
came and sort of put this idea to me. And I started thinking about it, you know, and there are hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of stories out there that need to be told in a way that this was told, which is sort of like your experience of living in a situation which calls for almost like survival techniques.
Oh, yes.
Although a lot of these survival techniques are unconscious,
mm-hmm.
and so on, but they're there because we're still living. And when you can hear on a tape one of your relatives that was born in slavery, you know, it all sort of comes back to you. So this is the idea of the genesis of this this book. And then there is the unity part of it, because it's community unity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we all have that in our various communities, but there was an actual court case that actually made this a reality. That is a physical reality. Because in my community, they were going to put your typical highway through there and going to break up to me, things like eminent domain and so on. A lot of Black communities, you know, got broken up this way, you know, and separate. But a couple of people in the community actually sort of fought this. And it ended up going to, threatened to go to court, went to the Department of Transportation and so on. But to make it short, what happened is they decided that they could not break up this community because it was too tight and would be physically and mentally negative to break this community up. So they decide to just move it intact a little ways away.
Oh, wow.
And this is what they did. Now, you had the option of going into this community, or you had an option of going someplace else, but most of the community just moved intact, just a little ways away. So the community was kept that way. So I say community unity. And I'm saying, well, you know, what is it? What are the factors that keep this bond so tight, and what happens? And there are probably lots of factors that lead to this. But I decided to focus on music.
Okay.
As the bond.
Wow. So, now, you appear to be a jazz aficionado. That's
well,
the
impression. I do love it. There's still a lot of it. Always have.
So tell us about, okay, so you chose music, and what were the key themes and topics that, as you thought about writing this book about music, that you felt were so compelling that you wanted to share that with the world community?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I started with my own feelings, which I think are pretty typical. Mm-hmm. Because when I felt something, look around, other people seem to be feeling the same thing. And so music was sort of like, no one sits around and thinks about this, like in the community, saying, oh, music is bringing us together, making us one, making us a whole. Just some of those things that happens. So everywhere you go, there is music. I noticed this. Everywhere you go, there's music. Church, there's music. You go to people's houses, there's music. In my house, there's music. From the time you wake up in the morning, turn on the radio. You have, in my case, you had WSRC, which is a Black radio station,
mm-hmm.
on your way out to school, and you hear music there too, because in my case, in fifth grade, I started playing music, actually, in school and so on. So, I just found that it was so good, and the way it made people feel, there must be some power there that for me is unexplainable. I let somebody else, sort of deal with explaining how that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. And it sort of allowed me to talk about lived places, right? To put myself in that place, my upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And think about all the things I wish I could go back to and actually ask questions about, find out a little bit more about it.
Right. And so your book, published by Live Places, how many chapters will it be? And is it what you call a heavy read, a light read, medium read, fun read?
Well, I hope it fits pretty much all those categories, but it is sort of directed towards university students and so on. So it has your typical kind of breakdowns and footnotes, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's mention of maybe some other authors, et cetera, and so on, the kind of things that you find in your typical academic kind of a book. Mm-hmm. But because it is such a, are you still there? Oh yeah,
right here. No, right here. Yeah. No, I just put the page up so people will be able to see that the book is on the Live Places publishing site, and they're able to order it when it becomes available.
Oh yes, mm-hmm. indeed. So, in essence, that's how that worked out. But I will say that another fact was that I taught this class, Music and the Civil Rights Movement, for quite some time.
Yes.
And I actually was influenced to do this because I heard a lecture by Julian Bond,
mm-hmm.
who did this way back. Actually, I know exactly when it was. It was 1998, because he was part of this little thing that Gates did at Harvard, the Civil Rights Movement.
Okay.
I haven't participated in that. And he did this. And I said, well, this is fantastic. I really like this. So I went back and organized a class on this.
Nice.
Music and Civil Rights Movement.
Nice.
And where you can take a particular song to play that will illustrate a particular moment in time.
Mm.
So in this book, I actually use songs that inspired me to return to school after summer vacation.
Very nice, very nice.
Yeah.
Now, this book, I believe, is going to be very profound. And are you going to go on a lecture series to visit different universities to talk about the book?
Well, I don't know. You know, I am a senior citizen, so you know,
please. Oh, please.
Getting around is not as quick and easy as it used to be.
Right. Well, look at you can still cut the rug pretty good, so you know.
But I do hope that it inspires others to think about it.
Well, the thing about it is that I'm a Seton Hall graduate, and I'm an adjunct professor there in the business school. But Seton Hall had an African American Studies department, and then they shut it down. Well, now, because of the protests from alumni such as myself and others, they have reignited it. And one of my former professors, Reverend Forrest Pritchett, is the interim director. And I'm telling you, I'm going to send him your information. I'll do an introduction. I'm going to send him this video. I would say, hey, you got to listen to this interview, because I want this to be part of that his new program.
Oh, I'll say. Thank you very much. You spared me word.
Hey, you know, I always like to push forward those things that are so important to our community, because music, there was a gentleman named Walter Fields, good friend of mine. He's been on my program a few times. He's one of those activists for students. He was able to bring a lawsuit against the South Orange Maplewood, New Jersey school district because they would level our Black students out of the honors program, so to speak. And through his efforts, there was a lawsuit and it settled, but part of it was for them to change the way that they would do that. But I had him on my program a couple of times, and he loves music. He's a music aficionado. So Walter is probably going to call you. I'm going to introduce you to Walter. He's probably going to say, hey, I want to talk to you. Because Walter talks about how music represents different chapters of our life. And as you said, you know, you would use music to, as you get ready to go back to school, you know. What is it that you hope that the reader will come away after finishing your book?
Well, thinking about their own musical experiences and what it played in their lives. Maybe go back to their childhood and think about, you know, what type of music was played on the radio and what were they thinking about, you know?
Right.
What, you know, how they feel, you know, when the school band was playing, you know, during their years. Did they feel that spirit, you know? Mm-hmm. And if they ever had to go to church, you know, how they feel when they knew that music made them feel really, really, really good. So, but they never had a chance to reflect on it at that time. So now it's a chance to reflect on that and even think about it in terms of their own development and how it helped them to maybe overcome some things. You know, were you feeling down, melancholy? Did you put on some music?
Yeah.
When you're feeling good and want to, you know, jump around, move a little bit, did you put on some music?
Right. Right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And when you're making those long trips in your car.
You know? That's right. You know, that is so true. That is so true. And so the reader will come away, you want them to come away with, you know, understanding, well, what is the soundtrack of their life? And I have to say that came from Walter Fields. You know, music is the soundtrack of your respective life. Was there anything new that you learned in doing your research when you were putting this book together, during your research? Anything new that you learned about North Carolina?
I learned a few things about the way the social structure was set up down there that I never paid attention to before. The Black communities were far apart. There are about four or five of them. They're far apart. So it was very difficult for us to communicate one another in a communal kind of way when it came down to protests, demonstrations, et cetera, and so on. So I learned a little bit about that that I didn't know before, so much about before. But I also, when I was looking at some of these papers with the deals and the conversations that were going on between the black and white elite there, I also learned about how they were actually, you know, communicating on a pretty high level in terms of how things are done around there in Durham. I learned that. And but I also learned about what happens when you sort of take for granted a community. You're growing up, this community is tight. You're going down because of segregation, you know, this black gate, there's black restaurants and so on. So you feel comfortable going to all these different kinds of places. And then what happens when that no longer exists, the kind of difference in the feelings and the even maybe even some of the difficulty comes to getting a whole black community together, you know, to fight for a particular, you know, a right. Now, certainly, you know, segregation, it was like the law. So that was pretty easy. You know, it's easy to say, okay, yeah. Well, yeah, that was so good. But how about now, you know? You know, how can this be done today when there is no legal segregation going on, but there are still some injustices? So so reflecting back, or even a young person reading this may use it as a way to think about organizing or protesting or the power of community or even power of music. You know, I don't know, I haven't seen a lot of the marches that have gone on, but I know that all the marches that I was talking about back then, everybody was singing, there's music involved in it, some kind of way. But now I haven't seen a lot of Black Lives marches or anything like that, so I don't know if they're singing or what it is that sort of, you know, bonds them together. But I would hope that music is realized as being one of those kind of things. And the way you can use music to improvise to fit your situation.
Right.
So, you know, like those examples of the Freedom Songs, classic examples.
Yes.
You know, if you sit around listening to some hip-hop music and you know that hip-hop rhythm, then put some political lyrics to those hip-hop rhythms while you're out there, you know, protesting, then get, you know, really fired up and going.
You know, one of the things that Walter Fields talked about, this is a few years ago when he was addressing a young group of folks at a church on a Saturday. And he talked about how he can relate to his music and he can sing it out loud because it doesn't have the profanity and other things. How do we balance that in our culture? When we're dealing with the hip hop and the rap, but sometimes when the rap goes off into the, let's say the tough language, the language that we wouldn't want to say in front of our mothers or, you know, wives and daughters and et cetera.
Yeah, that's a difficult because the social network didn't exist back when years I was talking about.
Oh yeah.
And now you can just do anything to get anything out there onto the air that's accessible to a lot of people. So I think there needs to be maybe a higher consciousness among the youth in terms of the kind of lyrics that they are attuned to. Now, like I say, you know, when you watch MTV or those kind of things, you know, and you see all the hip hoppers out there, you know, doing quite well with all the, you know, diamonds and gold. yeah, that can be quite attractive because it is a sense of freedom, you know, and so on in a way, you know. But I think that until something, you know, really oppressive or repressive comes along, it's going to be very, very, very difficult because I think a lot of people like pleasure, and you know, when you got those lyrics, you know, talking like that,
I say God has given us all free will, right?
Exactly.
From your perspective, you have lived a life of full of experiences. I mean, thank you for sharing, and thank you for your service and to America and the military for that. But what are the key themes and concerns that's holding America back from really fulfilling the Constitution, that every man is equal?
I think there's been so many years where the people who are in charge were literally in charge. And I would say, you know, the white male. And they had so many centuries to work on it. And they are generations of individuals that have a stake in that white superiority and white supremacy.
Yes. You know, yes.
And I think that it's very, very difficult for anyone who is in that position to want to give it up easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's always going to be resistance.
Yes.
Now, I asked my students the other day, I say, well, who was at the Constitution? Who wrote the Constitution? Were there any poor people there? Were there any minorities there? And if you were there, wouldn't you be writing out in your own best interest? So you know, you have to deal with the people who wrote that up and what they were up to. And, you know, the Bill of Rights are almost like an afterthought, I think. You know, it's good they got that in there, that top 10 Bill of Rights there.
Right.
And everybody should be able to live by that. But at the time they wrote it, I mean, you know, they probably weren't worried about Black people having to, you know, make demands on that because we were slaves. There were no rights. They were in charge. So, but now, you know, it's a struggle to change that around. I think it really dawned on a lot of white individuals when Barack Obama won the election to be president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to look at a Black president. So I think that, you know, sort of, you know, led to a lot of this kind of resistance that you see around today, you know, a lot of name calling, it's escalated, you know.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Various forms, other kinds of hatred is escalated. Mm-hmm. So I think that is what's holding them back. And they're in Congress, you know, and they got the Supreme Court, which is supposed to be an interpreter of the Constitution.
Right.
Yeah, and we know what they've done through history.
Right.
You know, always the oppressive referendum, so they did Brown versus Board, but now they have the power to do something totally the opposite.
Right. Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's holding back our constitutional rights. The voting rights is under assault. All those years and struggle that we fought for that Voting Rights Act, you know, is under assault in a lot of states now.
I was happy to hear that the senator from Arizona is going to be challenged. And this gentleman was on TV the other day announcing early, you know, because when you think about not giving someone the right to vote, after all that our community has done to build this country, and then to say, well, we might take away your right to vote.
Mm-hmm. Really? 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 I think the feeling is that we'll be voting in too many people who have our interests in mind.
Right. The demographics, you know, have been shifting for decades. And it's something that just can't change, you know? Just can't change.
Exactly.
You know, I would love to sit in your class. I would just love to sit in your class and just hear you lecture, because the pearls of wisdom just, it just flows right out. And David had told me, and that's David Parker, who is the one of the owners of the Live Places Publishing, has said, Darrell, you're going to love Dr. Freeland. And he's absolutely right. You know, what's next after this book? Oh, you know, what gem are you going to share with us next?
I don't know. I really don't, you know. I am sort of working on some more activities to go along with that book.
Whatever we can do to help promote whatever you're doing, you can count on my audience and my LinkedIn audience of like 17,000 people.
Well, thank you very much. I will.
And what do you think some of those activities might be?
For instance, take a chapter on the church, for example.
Okay.
The activities would be to either visit a African-American church, listen to the sermon, listen to the rhythm of the pastor, you know, and watch the, you know, or, you know, the congregation. And then at the church, if they're having a, you know, a little eat, you know, go there, mingle it out, and get that experience. And another part would be, of course, would be I would have a link on there to gospel music. Yes. Listen to gospel music. Some of the older gospel music by Mahalia Jackson. And then read a couple books on gospel music. So that would be one activity to go along with the chapter on gospel music there. And I would do that for all the rest of them. For instance, the one on rhythm and blues. Right. Or the one on jazz.
Have you thought about talking to Spotify about doing a deal where your audio book and your book will be tied to music?
Ah, that's a little bit sophisticated for me, huh? I don't know, but I hadn't even thought about it. Obviously, I haven't thought about anything like that.
Well, you know, you know, I live in digital, so you know, I think about these things. But I just finished a Netflix thing on Spotify, and as soon as you talk about music, I said, oh, he's got to do a deal with Spotify, you know, because you're going to have the audio version of your book as well, right?
I don't know. I mean, you had said to David about that kind of.
All right. I'll say, David, where's the audio version? Well, this is great. You know, I tell you, time flies by when you're having fun, and I'm learning so much. We're going to have you back on the program. I'm actually going to air this the next two Saturdays, because Black History Month, of course, is February, and so we'll give folks an early treat. But then for those who miss it, they'll get the second week. But before we go, what final words of wisdom would you like to leave with our audience about your book, Music and Black Community in Segregated North Carolina, published by Live Places Publishing?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to say the last part of that book is, it's all right. You know, don't get depressed about the situation, because if you're depressed about the situation, it's too difficult to get motivated to do something about it. So that situation can be segregation. It can be just a little domestic event, but whatever it is, you know, you must be uplifted to be able to deal with it.
Yes.
And and so keep the music flowing.
Wow. Well said. Well said. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank our guest, author, Professor Gregory K. Freeland. And he has his PhD in social politics. Is that right?
Political science.
And he has his book coming out, Music and Black Community in Segregated North Carolina, published by Live Places Publishing. And we look forward to having you back on the program. Thank you so much, Professor Freeland.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. We want to wish you a very good weekend, but remember, leadership begins with you.